Well, the good news is that everything's been said and sung today, and we can go directly to the tacos, because indeed, this is a complicated day. There are some days and some sermons that are pretty much one point that I try to examine. But May Day has so many meanings and so many connotations. One of the first is it's a cry for help. When you're in trouble, when you're drowning, when your ship is sinking, literally or figuratively, you scream out, May Day, May Day, May Day. And it comes from the French, May Day. It's a request for help. It's saying, I can't manage this. I can't do it alone. I need you right now. It's a request, it's a call, and it's a prayer. May Day is also a Labor Day, a Union Day, a time to express solidarity, to find solidarity of effort. It's been traditionally around unions and the right to organize, the right to bargain. It's also become about human rights, and many of us will remember a few years ago the May Day melee in MacArthur Park that was essentially a police riot against mostly peaceful demonstrators. There were some problem makers in the back, but my experience in Berkeley is that the problem makers in the back who throw things don't get beat up. The peaceful people in the front do get beat up. So we should probably hang out with the tough ones in the back. It's safer. But it's a time of organizing. And May Day, this May Day, happens coincidentally also to be Yom HaShoah, which is the commemoration of the Holocaust in Europe. And we have all of these events coming together, along with the happiest connotation of May Day and of May, which is about spring and renewal and, if I can say it, sex and sexuality and reproduction and everything that is maypole and spring and renewal and new life. Literal new life in the form of babies and new life in terms of spirit. So there's it is, in a sense, a microcosm of life because it has the good news, it has the bad news, it has the laughter, the celebration, the tragedies. It is, as Walter Cronkite used to sign off, it is a day like any other day, filled with the events that alter and illuminate our lives. And this is a time of complex illumination. Many of you know, except for the visitors who we make sit in the corner the first time, and that later on they get to move into the center, that I write for a couple of newspapers as well as teach current events. And it is my job by discipline and disposition to follow what goes on in the world, to look at the folly, to look at the fun, to see us at our silliest and at our most tragic, and to try to make sense out of all of this. And I say try. I will not claim to make sense out of all of this, but to try to make sense of this by capturing it for a moment in the net of words and of thought. I don't write what I know about. I don't preach what I know about. I write and preach to find out and to try to organize my thoughts and my feelings and reconcile them when they are not congruent. And that happens from time to time. Being a human being who looks at the world, there are times when I'm horrified. There are times when I'm exhausted, when I want to just step back, turn off the television, rip out that NPR implant that I have somewhere back in the occipital lobe. I want to turn away because sometimes the madness is too much. And I just want to yell, Mayday! Mayday! Help me! Help me not turn away. Help me get my strength back. My energy back, my belief back that what we do, what we choose, can make a difference in this big world. Help me see what's out there. Let me feel what's in here. And let me, through my actions, connect those things. When I look at the celebrations, first of all, let's look for a moment at the labor aspects. I have to tell you that as a young person, once upon a time, I never thought that my world would ever revisit Darwin. When I saw Inherit the Wind, the story, only lightly fictionalized, of the Scopes monkey trial, I never thought that 50 years later we would be looking at this again and there would be legislation and there would be candidates for the presidency of the United States saying, well, I don't know about this evolution thing. Well, they've proven their point. I never thought that we would ever be revisiting collective bargaining, that those rights once won would be inscribed for a long time, that was a battle that did not have to be re-won. That was a flame that we didn't really have to tend again. And I was wrong, because we obviously do. And I have to tell you, I don't understand it. I do absolutely understand that all of our financial problems are due to retired teachers and firefighters, and that the multinational corporations and that Wall Street and that the banks have nothing to do with it. It's all the retirees. $600 million salaries, that's just a drop in the bucket. But those teachers and a marginal tax rate that was the same as during Clinton would obviously be a job killer, because everybody knows that we're doing such a good job under the present circumstances of creating jobs. There are times I just look at the madness and I want to go, is anybody paying attention? Why is it that we are relitigating this? I have nothing against the ultra-rich. I'd love to be ultra-rich. When I go to pay my taxes and my accountant looks at my tax returns and I am so proud of my deductions and my capital losses, he said, you know, the point of investment is actually to have capital gains. And paying taxes is a good thing because it might actually reflect income. And I say, okay, I'm on your side now. All right, we're going to go for the income thing. I have nothing against that. My question is, once you've shipped the jobs offshore, try saying that fast three times, and I didn't go to the alcohol event. After you've shipped all of the jobs offshore and you've right-sized every company, who's going to buy your product? Who's buying the widgets? This is not a system that can work in the long run. And so I don't get it. I don't get how bankrupting the middle class and the lower middle class is going to boost an economy. Most of our experience is that when you raise people out of poverty, they become customers, and it actually is good for you. So this is a mayday where I look at our world and I say, mayday, help us see through all of the noise and the nonsense at our history, at what works and what doesn't work, and we may have different conclusions on that, but it should be a thoughtful process of examining. I look also at Yom HaShoah, and I mourn. I mourn that a society that was cultured, that was educated, could not see the humanity in the other. So I mourn for my Jewish family that perished in the Holocaust. I mourn for my Unitarian family. Last week when I talked about Norbert Chapek and the Flower Communion, he died in a concentration camp. Unitarians were also put in concentration camps, sometimes sorted with the Jews, sometimes sorted with the Muslims and sometimes sorted with the communists. I mourn, too, for my gay and lesbian family who were singled out also and put into camps to be exterminated because they were seen along with developmentally disabled and physically handicapped people as something less than human. That's our original sin, that we can look at human beings and not see and feel our own humanity coming back from their eyes, that we can look at the other, we can look at the poor person on the street and not see a human being, but just see a smell, see an other, see something that terrifies us, because at the deepest level, we know that we are not separate creatures bound on separate journeys, but we are fellow human beings across all of the races and ethnicities and religions that we use to keep ourselves apart from each other. Just a quick quote of the shortest chapter in the Bible, and it's one that we can all understand. Jesus wept. When we look at what we do to each other, when we see what we do not see, when we look at the poor, when we look across the world and we see all of those others and we feel superior, and the superiority, as it often does, covers up an insecurity. I look at the world at the moment right now. Africa has got some very major issues. We believe in democracy, and a Muslim won in the Ivory Coast, and the Christians cannot abide that decision. And a Christian won in Nigeria, and the Muslims cannot abide that decision. An African American won in the United States, and there are an awful lot of people that cannot abide that decision. And Jesus wept. How do we do this? What heartens me and what discourages me at the same time is that all of these major distinctions we create are transitory. They don't last forever. The issues that people thought were important 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 500 years ago, don't register today. But what does register seems in the moment to be so important in ways to keep somebody as an other. I've mentioned this before, but there are enough new people sitting in the corner that I'll mention it again. And that is, when I started doing wedding services 40 years ago, if you had a Catholic marrying a Presbyterian, it was a shocking mixed marriage, and the parents were barely talking to each other. If you had a Catholic marrying a Jew, it was a shocking mixed marriage, and you had the partners, well, if it was Jewish and Italian, at least they were yelling at each other and there was food involved, so it wasn't terrible. But if you had two Lutherans from different synods, whoa, Katie, bar the door. A Missouri synod person and a Wisconsin synod person cannot be married in the eyes of God. It's just wrong. And the first time I performed a lesbian union in 1970, the parents were not ecstatic. We've come a long way. The next gay union that I did, the parents were also very upset, but that was because one spouse was Jewish and one spouse was Catholic. Hallelujah, we've made some progress. Those differences that seemed so important a generation ago. They're fading. We come up with others, but that's the reason for hope. We make a difference. We have seen progress. We've been part of that progress. We are, most of us, in blended families of one sort or another, and every day, every month, every year, we find that we are related to the other. And that maybe the other is really weird and really peculiar, and we understand, so are we. I remember my roommate, and this is a true story, this is not going for the joke. My roommate, my freshman year of college, when he found out I was Jewish, examined me for horns. What he found out was, as his adolescence matured, that he had horns also. So we had a certain commonality that got past the stereotypes. The stereotypes that we use to say, no, you're not quite right. No, you're not quite one of us. Your color, your race, your hair, your sexuality, your educational level, your language, just, I don't know. We should be fascinated by the other. We should be attracted to the other to learn, to share, to grow as individuals. Mayday, help me. Help me when I'm discouraged. See the humanity in the people that I would, by instinct, push away because they might be politically and culturally different. Help me. That's what we're here for. That's what Commitment Sunday's about. We understand that our voices alone are weak and thin reeds, but joined together we make music. We understand that we help each other when we are down, and sometimes if we're a little too arrogant, we'll bring each other down and act as a balance. That Mayday, it's a prayer. It's a call from the heart to other hearts to recognize our connectedness to each other and with the larger world. We, of all faiths, seek communities that will help us and guide us find our best selves. Accept us as we are, with our weaknesses, with our differences, with our eccentricities, and pool our talents together, pool our yeses together. Help us not have our souls adumbrated by all of the darkness of the seasons, but help us know that the spring comes. Help us see the spring coming. Help us believe in new life. Mayday, a celebration of life, a celebration of fertility, and a celebration of what we mean in terms of helping each other lead more meaningful lives in these moments that we share under the sun.